When you look around your office, at your coworkers, at your managers, do they look like you? Do they come from a similar background as you? Improving diversity and inclusion should be a priority for every workplace. But if there's one place that representation really matters, it's in a newsroom.
The American newsroom is less than half as diverse as the American population. And even when you factor in the fact that younger people are more likely to be Latino or non-white, it's still a pretty shocking statistic that we are that far behind.
Farai Chidea is a program officer for journalism at the Ford Foundation and a fellow at Harvard's Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy. And of course, she's been on this show many times. In a new report out today, Chidea's research into diversity of the 2016 political press corps was stymied by silence.
Most of these major news organizations declined to provide data, or just after me and my researcher querying for 2 months solid, multiple people, they just hid. That does not speak well for the level of accountability in the American newsroom.
As a Black journalist who covered the 2016 election for the 538 newsroom, Chidea says her focus on the political press told a bigger story about the stories American newsrooms have consistently missed as a result of the lack of diversity in their ranks.
My original plan was much more complex. Here, the story became the non-reporting, lack of transparency. But what I wanted to do was actually get analytics for these teams and then run them through MIT's Media Cloud and some other content analytics engines and see if more diverse newsrooms produced different coverage. I still think that that's a worthy goal, but if you don't have the basic numbers, you can't run the more complex analytics. And so I think one of the things that we as a field, journalism, need to think about is what are we missing by the lack of transparency?
Farai, your research goes all the way back to the Kerner Commission report. Could you tell us why you chose to start there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is that I think historical grounding is really important. And the Kerner Commission report, if its recommendations had been followed, would have resulted in very different newsrooms in America, but also just, I think, a profoundly different civil society. So it was formed during the Johnson administration to try to figure out why there had been so-called race riots in many different cities, including Newark and Detroit. And essentially what it found was that the federal government's role in economic and racial segregation was causing people to lash out. But it also said media coverage was a huge factor, where you had people either being stereotyped or not covered, and that people had a legitimate expectation, their words, of adequate coverage in the news. And so if you think about the U.S. press being enshrined in the First Amendment, it does have a function in a democracy. And when you make people invisible or you stereotype them, you are putting your thumb on the scales of democracy.
I've often argued for more inclusion or diversity, and I think, you know, I often am met with the sort of eye roll of, well, why do we need this? Is it just, you know, so we can check boxes, right? There's a lot of folks who ask, how many Black people is enough? How many brown people is enough? How many women is enough? And I don't have an answer for enough. I just think we're not there. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of the news organizations outright said, I will not give you the numbers, but even more just avoided me. Again, I was contacting 4 or 5 people at each organization, some of whom I knew personally who'd never responded. Among those, the only two, and I actually respect them more for declining to provide data than from hiding, but it was the Wall Street Journal and CBS declined to provide data. And their answers were sort of along the lines of, we don't talk about employee matters or, you know, but it's like, well, this is not really an employee matter. This is a systemic issue that's deserving of research attention. And I bring up the example of Kai Wright, who is here at WNYC now, but he wrote a piece about his parents losing their home to predatory mortgage lending. And as, you know, a Black family in America, they were much more likely to, as was the case, have been steered into a subprime loan when they qualified for a conventional mortgage. And so I think about it this way. You know, Kai's reporting showed how profound the predatory lending in communities of color was. This wave hit before the main mortgage crisis wave. Because people of color were not consistently covered from an overall economic and housing standpoint, people missed this wave of predatory lending. We could have actually slowed or prevented a lot of the losses in the mortgage market if we had paid attention to the lives of Black and brown people.
You mentioned two newsrooms that didn't provide data, but you did get data from other newsrooms. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about those and how did they stack up against each other?
Yeah, so I got data from five newsrooms, but only four provided their political press corps data. Some of them said, oh, well, we don't break it out and, you know, we're going to give you the overall. But they ranged from 10%, you know, non-white or Latino reporters at the New York Times, both two Black women in that case, to 32% people of color at NPR, which was the highest figure, but interestingly included African-Americans and Asian-Americans, but no Latinos in the mix. And so I found that no reporting team that gave me the granular numbers actually had white, African American, Latino, and Asian.
Wow.
You know, yeah. Some had only one. So, you know, it's like it's just really interesting to me. And I think that when you have a more diverse team, you send different types of people into the field, you get different responses. Isn't that what you want? If you have a robust newsroom, don't you want people coming back? And, you know, if you sent a white male reporter and me to a Trump rally, we'd probably have been treated differently. And that actually would have been healthy for the newsroom, you know, to understand that.
Let's talk about solutions. What can actually be done? I mean, I feel like we've been, you and I and everybody who's involved in this conversation has been talking about this for so long. What can we do, Farai?
Well, I mean, again, the reason that I keep going back to acquiring these diversity statistics is not because I think that they alone solve anything. They give us an analytical framework to understand what we need to work on. And so I think that some of the findings out of this, I would say, is that newsrooms should be planning their 2020 political teams now. And if they're not comfortable with the level of diversity in their 2020 political teams, they better figure out how to recruit internally or externally. But on a broader level, having the numbers is really about just keeping track of where there's resistance inside newsrooms to change. It's really important to understand that it has been hard, it will be hard, and there will be resistance. And newsrooms have to have an internally consistent policy about how to deal with resistance to integration.
Farai Chidea is a program officer for journalism at the Ford Foundation and worked on this research while a fellow at Harvard's Shorenstein Center for Media, Politics, and Public Policy. Farai, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tanzina.
And if you're curious about how New York Public Radio is doing when it comes to diversity in our own workplace, the numbers are public. For the period of July 1st, 2016 through June 30th, 2017, NYPR's total workforce was 53% women and 47% men. People of color comprise 28% of the newsroom, and you can find out more by going to wnyc.org/about/review.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.